Welcome to Psychedelic Insights, a podcast made by Reinfang and the Danish Center for Psychedelic Awareness. Most of the 10 episodes of this series were recorded at the Interdisciplinary Conference on Psychedelic Studies 2022, which took place between the 22nd and 24th of September in Haarlem Philharmonie near to Amsterdam. In the series, you will meet 10 speakers from the conference who all do research or work within the psychedelic field. Each of them takes different perspectives to the study and usage of psychedelic substances, and our hope is that the episodes will collectively leave you with an impression of the variety of themes and interests currently at play in the blooming interest in psychedelics. If you have never heard about psychedelics, but your interest is piqued, then go to the first episode in this series, where we provide a crash course that will get you dressed to the sound journey ahead. As most of the podcasts are recorded at the conference where more than 1,000 people attended, we hope that you can bear with the sounds of coffee machines, piano playing, and other people talking now and then. In this episode, you will meet Professor of Psychiatry and Psychotherapy at Hannover Medical School, Torsten Passy. Passy is a long-standing contributor to the psychedelic field. He's published numerous articles and books on psychedelics, such as The Science of Microdosing Psychedelics, Healing with Entactogens, and The Pharmacology of LSD. As mentioned in the podcast, Passy is sometimes referred to as the encyclopedia within the psychedelic milieu. He has done remarkable work in recording and re-actualizing all the research that was conducted in what is called the first wave of psychedelic research between the late 1940s and early 1970s. In the podcast, we talk with Passy about the key findings from this period and about what lessons the current second wave of psychedelic research ought to acquire from previous research efforts. We hope you will enjoy the conversation. So I'm here with Torsten Passy. Welcome, Torsten, and thank you for taking time to talk with me. We're on the second, no, we're on the third day, we're on the last day of the conference, and you gave your presentation yesterday morning. Right. So you've had the chance also to just enjoy the conference, I guess, yesterday and the day today. We've retreated again before the first break to have this conversation, and I just wanted to ask you a very general question, because I've looked through your bio and your list of publications, and it's very evident that you've worked within this psychedelic field in decades. You've had more than 200 publications. Can you summarize what has some of the key interests and themes been of your research so far?
So it became evident to me that these drugs can be used in a therapeutic fashion, which I came across that recognition in 1980. Quite a while ago, and at that point in time we had a very dark age in respect to psychedelics, so I had no idea how to go further with my interest. And so what I did some self-experiments, and also I looked out for every kind of publication or evidence about the therapeutic use of these substances. And after studying that for a while, it became evident to me as a philosopher, as a, at that point, student of philosophy, that I might be a medicine man kind of person and might make use out of these substances in the future. But at that point, there was zero stuff going on worldwide. And so what should I do? So I was going over to the Americas, especially Mexico and Guatemala, trying to find shamans. They can work with it. They do that secretly, whatever. And so I came across a few of these shamans and could observe them. They were quite okay with it because at that point nobody was interested in their work. And so they were eager to give some insights into what they are doing. And I found that they were very effective in using these agents. And so it strengthened my idea that these are therapeutic substances. And then in 1985, there was a collegium founded in Germany, the College for the Study of Consciousness by Hans Karl Leuner and others. Albert Hofmann, the discoverer of LSD, was by the organizers too. And we also had a development in Switzerland where they founded the Swiss Physicians Society for Psycholytic Therapy. Mm-hmm. And so there was something going on, and I immediately checked in. And a while later, I was very much in contact with the Swiss people, and they got a permit to do MDMA and LSD therapy in the late 1980s. Mm-hmm. And so I checked in with them. I could observe their sessions and learn something from it. And I even took part in them, in some of them. As a kind of patient stuff, so I got a lot of views about that kind of thing, and they furthered me and were very nice to me. And then I learned to know Hans Karl Leuner, the great guy in psycholytic therapy. He is, by the way, the guy in Europe. Not so much known about him because he just published his stuff in Germany, but he was taking the lead. He was also the president of the European Psycholytic Association at that time, and we have recently finished a book about him, a complete book about him. And this guy was at first reluctant to accept me as an apprentice, but when I approached him the third time, he said, okay, phone me up, come over, I'll show you. And then I learned with him for 3 years on a daily basis. We had three patients going on in three different rooms, and so I got a lot of experience through that thing. And I was still completely lost because nobody was there who could. After his death, I found another person who would teach me how to use these drugs in groups. I did that for 15 years on a regular basis, parallel to my above ground university career. Was very crazy, but the head of the department was very tolerant in my department. He said consciousness expansion is a really interesting field. So I had a good atmosphere going on there, and I conducted also some experiments there. But my main thing was to gain a comprehensive knowledge about these substances on all levels, because I came from two ways of studying the stuff: philosophy, sociology, history, and medicine, and psychiatry, and neurophysiology. And so I have a very broad understanding of the matter. And at that point, there was not so much research going on. So what could you do? You can study it on a practical level, on a theoretical level, on a historical level. And this is what I did. And so today they call me the walking encyclopedia of psychedelic drugs, because I've read virtually everything. I'm very well informed, and I'm still in favor of the matter. And I'm quite open, as you can see when I talk to you. Yeah, and my main interest was in not in microdosing, as I wrote a book about it, or the history things. My main thing is to use these substances in a therapeutic fashion, and I've done so for years or tens of years. Mm-hmm. And so right now I'm eager to conduct trainings and help people to do serious trainings, and in an appropriate fashion, not just making money and telling we are doing the right training and stuff. You really have to look out that it's well done, it is precise in detail and stuff like that. And we also in 2019 we founded an international society for substance assisted psychotherapy, where we are trying to reach with a lot of experts on board, internationally known experts, to conduct comprehensive kind of model curriculum for designing these trainings. And even if the people not go for it in the sense of replicating it, they can get stuff out of it, and they get an idea how an ideal curriculum might look. Mm. Yeah.
So you've really been on the sideline of this psychedelic wave, of the first wave, as they call it, mm-hmm. and the second wave, as mm-hmm. which we are right yeah. at or surfing yeah. at the moment. Yeah. So it's interesting that they call you the encyclopedia, because you've actually yeah. worked within various fields.
Yeah.
But yesterday a presentation yeah. was on this topic. So the title of your presentation was
Lessons from the first wave of psychedelic research, or especially in respect to therapeutic applications. And what yeah. I did, I gave an outline what has been learned during the 1960s and early 70s in respect to how to conduct the sessions, practical issues like should you do a breakfast in advance or not, yeah. stuff like that. You should do a light breakfast in advance. That is a recommendation which came out of it, because otherwise your sugar level will go down quite a bit and you might go on a bad trip because yeah. of that. But in pharmacological research, it's usual that the people don't eat a big meal in advance of getting a drug. And so therefore, these are insights from that phase, but also that you have to have it prepare another psychotherapy setting with the subjects. If you would give them a psychedelic drug in a, let's say, lower level, which is a European tradition, by the way, there are two traditions. I have to mention that. One is a psychedelic model, which is giving people higher doses to induce a kind of consciousness expanding experience of connectedness, of a mystical kind of experience. And this can be a very deep-reaching experience, altering your value system and may make you a little bit of a better human and stuff like that. But the treatment success, as we have known from the 60s, is not that long-lasting usually. Mm-hmm. It means you have to have accompanying psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you will not go through your personal issues, and they play a role too, not just your connection to the mystics or to God or whatever. And so the European tradition was another way, which has been called psycholytic, means lower doses and on a more regular basis, means from 5 to 25 sessions, and consequently embedded in a psychotherapy framework. So in fact, it is the opposite around. It means you have an ongoing psychotherapy and you put some spice in there, meaning you deepen the process by a session once in a while. You know, but the psychotherapy process is the base for it. And that's different from the psychedelic approach, which has been meanwhile reduced to 2 hours of preparation and 2 hours of integration and stuff like that. You will not solve your personal problems and your interpersonal issues in 2 sessions and 2 hours of therapy. That's kind of impossible. And so we are a little bit reluctant about to check into the psychedelic renaissance, because we might even think that after the psychedelic renaissance will be over, because the results are not that durable, you have to do more therapy and stuff like that, there might be a second phase of the new wave, which might be called the psycholytic renaissance. But we are not at that stage. I think in 2 years we may have another situation when the people have come down from the psychedelic hype and the bubble has bursted, and then they might come up and say, okay, we have to be more humble, we have to do more psychotherapy, it's not that good of an approach that you can push a button and you're beyond depression, it's not that easy. And then we would come up with the older psycholytic approach, which is still valid, I think. And but you know, the psychedelic bubble has mainly been generated by the US, and they have another background. So they had in history, if you go back, the psychedelic approach was originated in Canada, and they had Indians over there taking peyote cacti and stuff like that. So they were accustomed from their tradition to the high dose approach, so to say, because they have known from these Indians that some of their sociopaths and also alcoholics got better through these rituals. And so there was a tradition about that. And so the psychedelic approach originated that way. And in Europe, they had psychoanalysis going on as the main method of psychotherapy. And so they thought, okay, we can intensify psychoanalysis, and we can also reach out for patients, which we can't reach with the usual psychoanalytic approach, because we can activate their unconscious to be open more about the psychotherapeutic way of working on themselves. And that worked out quite well, but it has been forgotten. Yeah. But I would also like to mention that there are, from the first phase of the therapeutic application, there are 700 publications around, and 200 about psychedelic therapy and 500 about psycholytic therapy. Wow. So that is the main, that was the main approach. Without questions, they had in Europe, they had 25 treatment centers, clinics, and with the psychedelic approach, they had less than 5 in the US, nothing in Europe. So there is a European approach and the American approach. So you know that it's the new wave started somewhat in the UK, and they have very much of an affinity to the US, much more so than with Europe, where they, because of the Brexit, they are out of Europe meanwhile. Yeah. So, you know, there are two different lines of what we can do with these drugs in a therapeutic fashion.
It's a super interesting approach, because sometimes the first wave of psychedelic research is framed in a little critical manner, that it also had some critical aspects to it. But it's really interesting to hear you talk about what are the lessons that we can actually learn, some key findings that were found back then. So you've mentioned this one with the psycholytic therapy that has been almost forgotten.
Yeah.
Are there any other key lessons, as you see, that we should consider in this new
wave? Yeah, okay. So there was one key center about psychedelic therapy in the US. It was located in Maryland. And for example, Stanislav Grof, a well-known figure, worked there. Also Bill Richards, a guy still active here at the conference, teaching with me about how to handle these substances in a therapeutic setting. These guys were key in the former times, and they were kind of leading the paradigm. And interestingly enough, they found that their latest studies, there is a rumor that psychedelic research or psychedelic therapy research has been stopped because of the prohibition. That's in fact untrue. So the American government financed 5 studies which have been conducted in a methodologically sound fashion about alcoholism and the psychedelic approach and neurotics and the psychedelic approach, and all these studies produced 0 results. It means they couldn't show that the psychedelic therapy model is better than usual psychotherapy. So they failed to prove that method is worth it. And so this is why the research was stopped, because it doesn't make sense to invest in an approach which has been proven to not working. And so the guys at Spring Grove, at that Maryland Psychiatric Research Center, the key leaders at that point with psychedelic therapy, they concluded, and you can read that in one of their last dissertations, which a person has done there, they said, we have to combine these approaches. And for example, Stanislav Grof, and the main findings of his first most significant book, Realms of the Human Unconscious, were generated from psycholytic work, what he did with lower doses in Czechoslovakia. And so they came to the conclusion, let's make up a new model, integrate both approaches, and they called it the psychedelic approach. So it combines psycholytic work with all the careful work, the little work on the ego, as it has been called by Sigmund Freud, the father of psychotherapy. And that means that you work on your psychodynamic as well as your interpersonal issue on a more kind of small step way, you know, on a weekly basis for, let's say, a year or longer. But you also implement 1 or 2 or 3 psychedelic high dose sessions, which might also further the process and give you more connectedness and more power for doing these changes which are necessary during your little work on the ego. And so I think the future will be, in fact, the psychedelic approach, where you combine the approaches, but the base will be the psychedelic approach, I think.
That's super interesting. In your opinion, has the current research in any way progressed beyond what we found in the first wave? Are we still just replicating the findings that they did?
Yeah, we are mainly replicating the findings. And even if we look at the neuroimaging research saying, oh, there's more chaos in the brain, you know, everybody who has taken that drug in a sufficient amount will tell you, oh, there's more chaos in the brain. So we didn't find out so much new. But however, we try to apply mathematical models and having plausible exploratory hypotheses and stuff like that. That's always tempting also for scientists, for psychiatrists, for physicians. If they think they can understand it more, then they can manipulate it more, and that's in favor of them. And so, I mean, so this is the reason why they think we found out so much more, but that's not really that much true. But it's also interesting, if you are inventing the wheel again, if nobody knows about the wheel before, the history of the wheel, so to say, then they might think, oh, we found something really new. But the people have not that much historical knowledge. A lot of them don't know anything, really. And they also are, in a way, kind of, even the researchers today are kind of a little bit of being arrogant, like saying, oh, the old stuff, it was methodologically not blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
This is not quite true. Please look at all the experiences which have been done. And there is, for example, a bibliography out there which I have produced in the mid-1990s about all the therapeutic studies in the 60s, that it has even a subject index, can be found on the website of Giorgio Samurini in the internet, if you put in Samorini and Passy, you will find that bibliography, a PDF of it, and then you can see what has been done, and it's much more than what we do right now. But what is new, I think, right now is that we have a much more matured methodology in respect to psychotherapy research. We are not doing these studies right now. We have to expand to them, to do them. But also the imaging results are interesting. And what we also have meanwhile is much more sensitivity for side effects and adverse effects, and to study them in a systematic fashion. And I think that's also very important if we want to use these drugs, that we really know who may profit from it, who may not. These are predictors which we have to look out for still. And also that we are very much more aware of the potential dangers. But yesterday have shown me that that is not that much around. So we have to sensitize ourselves about that a little bit more in the future.
Yeah. So my last and final question then would be, so you obviously have a lot of knowledge within this field and you've participated in many conferences, I imagine. Is there anything at this conference that has sparked your interest or something new to you?
Yeah, not very much so, but what is interesting about these conferences is they were located in Central Europe, and they really, these guys here represent, I'm one of the organizers, but however, we represent the European stance much more so than anybody else. And it has a certain tradition, kind of 15 years we are around. And it seems that it really condensed here at this core. And these guys are so open here about all the dimension of psychedelics, not just the nature science, not just the imaging, not just the therapy. They're also looking out for the humanities, what they have to say, what's about ethical considerations, about people participating in these trials, if they are in an altered state, can they really agree to something during the state, and these kind of issues, and might there be a rule violations as known from usual psychotherapy, might this be happen more because people being in an altered state, being more helpless, being more suggestible, and all these kind of issues have to be brought up. And the American fans, they ignore these kind of problematic issues because they don't want to go into these critical things and dumb down their expectations, hopes and suggestions. And so therefore I think what is much needed is a more open, interdisciplinary and conscious, sensitive, attentive approach, and this is exactly what these organizers try to do, and they did well.
I think so too, and let's hope it continues this way. Thank you so much, Thorsten, for speaking with me. Thank you.
Thank you too. Bye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast was made in a collaboration between Reinfang and SEPTA, the Danish Center for Psychedelic Awareness. The music in the podcast was made by Victor Lange. Thank you to the Open Foundation for organizing and funding the ICPR conference and for providing us with a quiet space during the conference days for doing the podcast recordings.